It's February 2nd, 2012. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
I'm betting he's going to swerve first.
You didn't know what this was from.
I didn't remember it.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Emery did not know where this quote was from.
Phil?
Yeah.
Phil? From Groundhog.
Bing.
Yeah. Bing.
Ned Ryerson. We're talking about the movie Groundhog Day, because today is Groundhog Day. I've got a Groundhog Day item in my stuff, so we'll talk about that in a little bit, because this is a pretty hilarious series of news articles going around today. But before we get to that, Emery, where are we broadcasting from today?
I am broadcasting live on location from the Mark Babin Memorial Studios. And it's been a pretty rough year. Got lots of Memorial Studios to visit.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
All right, well, from those studios, let's present our stuff.
Yeah. Oh, but did I ever tell you about my BFF and one of my other BFFs that went to Punxsutawney?
Do you want to do this first? We can talk about this. Groundhog Day?
Well, I didn't go.
Go for it.
Well, I didn't go. Oh. I don't really know what to tell you other than that they went.
Other than you knew some people who once went to...
Yes.
went to see Punxsutawney Phil.
It's a real place.
I'm aware.
There was always that possibility that it was a mythical place.
Okay, yeah. Well, so apparently attendance... before the movie Groundhog Day, attendance was like 2,000 or 3,000 people. Now it's like 20,000.
They keep hoping for Bill Murray to show up.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and talk about this. There's a series of news articles this year that, apparently because every year everyone's got a report on this. So I guess every year kind of they need a different perspective. And this year's perspective was there's a bunch of other groundhogs out there that are also trying to predict the weather.
And they get their orders from Phil, though.
Well, no. So apparently Punxsutawney Phil was the minority opinion in this year's prediction.
Oh.
Yeah. So he predicted 6 more weeks of winter, making him the minority opinion among his groundhog brethren, who seem to think that spring is coming early.
That's so interesting.
There's like all these other groundhogs around the world that all predicted early spring.
I thought they only had the one. I didn't even know there were more than one groundhog in the world.
Oh, Punxsutawney Phil is the only remaining groundhog.
Well, he's the last. That's why his opinion matters.
Uh-huh. The thing that's great about this article, and it's linked in the show notes, so they talk about, they interview the I think it's the president of the Inner Circle, which is the group that wears the black top hats and deals with Punxsutawney Phil. And they ask him.
Feeds him a steady stream of carrots, hookers, and cocaine.
And they ask him why Phil's opinion is so important. And he says the reason is simple. He's never been wrong.
Oh.
He says Phil is incapable of error because the groundhog smartly avoids being site-specific in his prognostications. If Phil predicts six more weeks of winter, said Johnston, I guarantee you someone's going to have 6 more weeks of winter.
Well, bully.
I love this because it's like very clearly they are in on the joke, which is fantastic.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's Groundhog Day. The rodents are diverging on this winter's forecast, apparently.
Huh. Well, I think we'll see. I think we're supposed to get a bunch of snow dumped on us this weekend. And we've had like pretty much a snow-free winter.
Mm.
So I'm a little tweaked about that, but
yeah, I mentioned this to someone today, and they're like, well, are we going to have 6 more weeks of winter? I'm like, no, we live in Palo Alto.
Like, you won't get 24 hours of winter.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, but we're going back on topic here. Your stuff, what have we got?
So I've been checking out Kobook. So Patrick Roan, on his Twitter machine, he posted a link to this address book application. And I was like, oh, well, address book. I mean, a lot of people thought that, like, when Lion came out that the address book wasn't very good.
Oh, God, yeah.
People hate the interface and whatever and what have you. But there's an interesting take on the address book from Kobook. And it's not a finished product yet, but if you're a Mac user looking for a pretty slick new address book, it's worth a try. You can download it for free, and we should probably just link to it. But what you do, and what's kind of interesting about this, is that it lives like up in your menu bar, and then it will talk to your various social networks like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all that, and it tries to make sure that it has updated contact information for everybody. And there was this like really bad service. I wish I could remember what the hell it was called. It's like, I mean, everybody got email from this thing because it was like, hi, so-and-so is using blah service for Microsoft Outlook. Like, if you have, you know, you had to update your profile thing with these bozos, and then it would let someone send you emails better or something. I don't even know. But it's interesting to me because it can kind of, I'm curious, it's kind of treating like these social networks as if they were protocols. So it you know, speaks Facebook enough to like go talk to Facebook and look at your data and pull out your contacts there. And it speaks LinkedIn enough to go into LinkedIn and take a look. So all these like little connected APIs everywhere that are available, it's interesting when I see like desktop software or a mobile software that actually makes use of those in an interesting way.
And takes information that traditionally you'd have to go to the social network to access and makes it available is sort of on your terms.
Yeah. Yeah. So it pulls it down and shoves it into my address book, updates my contact photos and information and everything. I really like it. I think it's pretty cool. I think when they're, I mean, I haven't had any problems with it. When they get it out the door, I'd probably be lining up to buy it.
Cool. Yeah.
I think it's really cool. I also started using something called Sync Pro, which is a file synchronization software. It supports metadata and extended attributes, which is why I was taking a look at it. It's not as fast as Unison, but one thing that Unison doesn't do is retain those extended attributes. So if you're playing around with metadata on files and tagging things and all of that, it definitely doesn't help. But what's cool about Sync is that it supports it, and it can also use this. I think we may have already talked about this before, because it can use Back to My Mac.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like a little listening process. So if you're like, you know, behind a firewall somewhere or behind someone's NAT, and as long as you can get to Back to My Mac, it can still reach your home system and get yourself all synchronized. It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's very expensive. If you can get a academic pricing, though, it's very cheap. Huh. So it's worth a try, though, if you're looking for something a little bit more robust. The in terms of like feature parity, there's a software called Chronosync that is probably like, you know, really solid and does everything right, but it's also really slow and kind of hideous. Like I hate using it. So, I took a look at Sync and, I'm kind of coming around on it. So that's good.
Yeah.
I had, I got some of my hard drives back. Well,
your continuing saga of, rapidly degenerating hard drives. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got my Dell laptop, came back to me with a new hard drive yesterday. I haven't had a chance to, install an OS on it again, but, I have to remember to bring in like my little Fedora boot drive. I have like a little USB thumb drive that'll install Fedora for me. But, I got that back. So it was in fact dead. And then, I got a replacement 1 terabyte Seagate Barracuda that I shoved into my NAS and has been fine so far. And then I got another one that I'm going to be shoving into my my i7 workstation. So hopefully, I think I have all the hard drives that I'm expecting now. there was like this long string where I couldn't really tell you. I was paying the $9 for advanced replacement on all of them, and I had my helper request an additional RMA on some of them and find out what I had to do to get those done. But got that all squared away. I was actually really impressed. I talked to somebody at Seagate at the beginning of, or I think the middle of last week, and they were really good. Like, I'm really annoyed that I've had all these problems with all of these drives, but you know, they talked to me a little bit, and they were asking me questions like, you know, how am I using these? Am I doing anything weird with them? And I was like, can you define weird? And they said, not really. You know, how are you using them? And I'm like, well, some of them go into a NAS, which is like, you know, just a Linux NAS with a hardware RAID card in it. And the rest of them are going into various PCs. So, and one goes into a Mac.
Right.
And they were like, okay, sounds good. But
Well, I mean, that's great, especially considering all of the recent, you know, craziness that's happened in the hard drive industry. The fact that they're maintaining good support is pretty amazing.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, the first replacement 1 terabyte drive that they sent me was actually like a brand new drive. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that like tanked within 24 hours. And then they sent me a reconditioned drive that, and I quote, had to be tested, had to pass inspection and test 3 times before it went out. And it died in less than 12 hours.
Wow.
And then they sent me, well, I'm a little nervous because now I have the one that I put back into the NAS, and then I've got the new one that I haven't plugged in yet. I didn't want to do it before we did the show.
in case
I did something weird. Yeah, because I was like, oh, because it's always a pain in the neck. Like, yeah, so there's all that. And then I had like all sorts of shenanigans there. I have not installed 10.7.3 yet because everyone's like panicking about it.
Well, I don't actually know. I've heard the only thing I've heard about 10.7.3 is that there is an arrow icon in Safari that was apparently moved like 1 pixel to the right and 3 pixels up.
Okay, and then there's also like this weird like debugging message that's been showing up on people's dialog boxes and stuff. So there's like kind of an uproar. But if you're not a Mac user, you don't care. But it's kind of weird that some of that stuff didn't get banged out or what the circumstances are. But I think we'll find out soon. Yep. There's also like, I found out, I was so happy about this. There's one person on the VMware forums that had been running Star Wars The Old Republic on VMware. And like nobody else could. And we didn't know why. And apparently it was because he had like a really old version of the VMware tools installed. So this older driver makes the like 3D graphics stuff take a different path inside VMware.
Wow.
And for whatever reason, it was letting it work. And so the VMware people have finally said, okay, we're now acknowledging this is a problem. We're going to fix it. In the meantime, here's a link to download the old VMware tools. So I got to do that.
And, that's great, huh?
Yeah, it's all right. It's still not as fast as when I like reboot into Windows and play it there, but it's good enough.
If all you're doing is shifting in and queuing up a trade task or a crewmate mission thing,
or hitting exactly. So for stuff like that, it's perfectly acceptable. So I'm happy about that. And then on top of that, my whole being jealous of all the iPhone 4S users with Siri. I can't remember the company now, but there's a British company that had a service called Evie that came out. And there's like an app that you can buy, and it's like $1 or $2, something like that. And it's very similar to Siri. It doesn't have like the same hooks into the core OS like Siri does, but it lets you do things like pretty smart searches and can make recommendations, and it's pretty clever. It doesn't have the same personality. It's not as good.
Yeah.
I'll say that. It's kind of like Siri's weird neighbor that sometimes like mows the lawn without their shirt on when they really should be wearing a shirt. But it's kind of good.
All right. Yeah, I tried it out just a little bit before the show because, yeah, kind of like, I mean, I've got an iPhone 4. And as far as I can tell, there are no technical limitations that would prevent Siri from being on the iPhone 4.
No.
Wanting me to buy a 4S.
You want to hear my theory on that?
Yeah, what?
Because you're asking me, because I've always got a theory.
My theory
on that is that, so the day that Evie launched, it was horrible. Like, it did not work. I think I sent over like 8 queries, got no response. And then even when the iPhone 4S launched, it was hard to get Siri working. A lot of people were complaining that it was slow or unavailable and et cetera, et cetera. So I think that the reason that they made it only on the 4S, at least at first, is so that they could kind of have like a tiered rollout where they could kind of...
Yeah, but I mean, you think by now that we'd be at another tier of the rollout.
Why?
Well, because it's been a decent amount of time, and the people who would buy 4S's just to buy a 4S, you know, just for Siri or whatever, have already bought 4S's.
That's possible, but there's also a lot more people with iPhone 4s than there are 4S's.
Yeah. I guess.
In spite of the fact that they've sold tons and tons and tons of these things, obviously. But the fact is that the iPhone 4, the iPhone 4 has been out for over a year, and there are a lot of people that bought that handset that still have it.
Yeah, true.
So I think activating that feature like overnight would be a little risky. But
I think we'd see some hint of it or something. I don't know. I mean, like a yeah. you know a small beta or who knows. But I guess that's not how Apple does things.
I think it'll come out. I think if the rumors about the iPad 3 being announced for March or whatever are true, I think it would be in tandem with that. I think they would say the iPad 3 is coming out, and we're also opening up Siri for the iPhone 4. So any iOS 5 device would be able to Siri. That's
anyway,
what I,
but Evie seems okay, seems decent, seems like, I mean, my main use of Siri so far, and in trying out other people's phones with Siri on it, has been to see what you can make Siri say.
Like, yeah,
that is my main use case. So, in that respect,
you don't watch Big Bang Theory, do you?
I would never.
First of all, it's a good show you're missing out. Secondly, they had a really good episode that was all about Siri.
Okay.
One of the characters on the show ends up having like a somewhat inappropriate relationship with Siri.
See, I don't approve of that. Because like if you go back and you look at Seinfeld episodes.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, right. But like, you know, Seinfeld, like how many, you know, yes, there are plenty of Seinfeld episodes that take something and lampoon it. But like, it's never sort of a flavor of the month thing. Maybe the one about the English patient.
it's just a terrible movie. I hate it. Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying there.
But like, yeah, I mean, you know, but and even then, you know, it's not going for like the sort of the easy joke, you know.
That's true.
So yeah, I just that among other reasons is prevents me from watching The Big Bang Theory.
You think it's just too on the nose?
Yeah, yeah. And I think
it's a Chuck Lorre show. I mean, he did like the Two and a Half Men. I mean, it's right. not, you know, I agree with you that it's not a sophisticated program, but it is pretty funny.
Okay. All right.
And it has David from Roseanne in it.
I did not watch Roseanne.
And Blossom.
That was before my time.
Well, of course it was. I don't even know if you were born yet.
Anyway, all right, well, let's see. As far as my stuff goes, Groundhog Day, as I said, we talked a little bit about Old Republic. I appreciate Old Republic, but I last night, for about an hour, I popped back into WoW. I mean, there are things that are disappointing when compared to Old Republic, but the world is so much more interesting to navigate and explore.
Yeah.
And I love in World of Warcraft, you can go into a big city and, you know, you can look at like, it's massive. There's all these different, sections and buildings and all this stuff. And you can go into one of those buildings and there's upstairs bedrooms with like decorations in them. There's random shopkeepers that are, saying, talking about their life or talking with other people, or you know, it feels like there's detail
to the world. The fruit vendor,
right?
Walking by and yelling at you.
Yeah, exactly. Like it feels like there is detail to the world. It feels like the world is, it feels like it is a world, right? It feels like it's living in Old Republic. It just feels like you're, and part of it is, I mean, yeah, the sort of future setting isn't as conducive to building a really rich world as the fantasy setting, because the future setting is a lot more sterile and there's a lot more sort of, you know, very sterile, I guess, hallways and you know, all this future tech and whatnot. But yeah. Like, where's the random like shop that I walk into where the guy is like complaining about, you know, his droid assistant or whatever, you know, where's the like,
yeah. They have full screen cinematics and voiceovers, but they don't have like a certain ambiance that WoW has.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, just like it's that type of thing that actually pulls me into an MMO. It's that ability to, I mean, the other than sort of high end rating moments, the times that I remember most starkly about WoW, like the strongest memories I have of it, are finding really weird or interesting things in the world and then taking other people to go see those things.
Yeah.
you know, like you find that weird cottage in the woods that where something crazy is going on, you know, or you find like the passway, or, you know, the like secret way to get up onto a mountain that that you're not supposed to be able to access, and then there's like a, you know, a skeleton up there or something. You know, that type of stuff. Like, that is just not, it's not present in Old Republic. It's, you know, Old Republic is a bunch of manicured areas separated by hallways and paths. It's, you know, it just doesn't, you know, feel like a world.
I think, you know, one of the things contributing to that is that they have that sharding system where, like, some of, like, the big, high-populated areas are, like, segregated into these different, like, phased versions of itself.
So, yeah, you know, so I mean? Someone could be standing next to you and you don't necessarily see them if they're in a different phase.
Yeah, and that's stupid, because if you're going to do it, if you're going to do that, then why have the server concept where you have to, like, have people on different servers?
Well, so
like,
so what I heard about that is apparently under normal conditions, that's not supposed to happen. It's kind of like an emergency, you know, failover type thing.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like under normal load, it's every zone is supposed to be able to support you know, how the normal amount of people that would be in that zone. But if there's, you know, if like at launch there's a ton of people everywhere, or if there's like a massive event somewhere, then it starts doing that sort of sharding thing. But then, you know, even with massive events, there's something to be said, like, you know, say you're going to have an in-game wedding, you know, like has happened in World of Warcraft. So you're going to have an in-game wedding, and you invite all these people, and they all show up, and only a third of them can see each other. Like, that would suck. So, yeah, I think that does contribute a bit.
I hate to kind of, like, break a little bit, but does my audio sound okay? Because you sound like a robot gargling.
You're in good shape.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so I went into WoW for about an hour last night, and... I guess I liked it enough that I decided to throw in $3 to subscribe to World of Warcraft Remote for the next 30 days.
Why?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm still subscribed to SiriusXM. You know this.
Yeah.
So World of Warcraft Remote is this little iPhone app where you can access your auctions and your guild chat. Neither of which I care all that much about, because I'm not an active player anymore, but it seemed kind of cool, so I gave it a shot.
It is pretty neat, and if, you know, I haven't really had time to play any of these games lately, like I logged into Star Wars to check out the VMware thing to see if that actually worked, and then other than that, I don't think I've logged into WoW for a few weeks now. But, I mean, I keep my sub active because I'm on that stupid year plan that conned me into getting so that I could get the
free Diablos.
Yeah. And check out, you know, the pandas when they're getting ready to launch that. So yeah, there's a,
you're gonna have to pay again for the pandas though. It's gonna be like another $40.
I can bait a panda.
You can, oh, okay, you can bait a panda. Oh, right, we get in free to the oh, that's what you mean by check out. Yeah, we get free to the panda beta.
Yeah, and we'll see how that goes. And if it's terrible, then I'll avoid it like the plague. And if it's good, then I'll buy yet another expansion pack.
Cool. All right. Well, anyway, speaking of mobile applications that connect with games,
what you got?
I am in the Steam mobile beta.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that an Android thing though?
It's an Android and iPhone thing. As far as I can tell, yeah. And it's pretty slick. Like the app itself is really quick to navigate. Really, you know, sort of. I think they based it on the same framework as the Facebook mobile app, which is this. It's really snappy. It's, you know, it's got a nice navigation interface. It's pretty easy to get around in. But there's a few issues, which are apparently just beta issues, but mainly it's like, I mean, my main use for a Steam mobile app is probably two things, is checking like the deal of the day or the weekend deal or that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the other half of it is chatting with people. And at the moment, the only way to chat with people is to keep the app open all the time, because otherwise you'll miss messages.
That's stupid.
Yeah.
They should turn that chat thing into like an XMPP jabber service, like smart people do.
They're going to... Oh, yeah. You know, they should just allow any client to connect to Steam chat, you mean?
Well, yeah. Because that's what they do with Facebook, because you can connect to Facebook through XMPP.
Yeah, I think the way they've got... You know, I think the way they integrate like game invites, the way they integrate trading, the way they've got a lot of stuff.
That's dumb. I can't believe that they would.
Yeah,
I don't think they developed their. I bet it's all jabber on the back end.
Probably.
Because did you know that push notifications on iOS and Mac OS X, they look a lot like jabber messages. Like I think Apple actually uses
the actual protocol that's happening behind the scenes.
I think they're using XMPP to send those notices and subscriptions things. I seriously do. I think I've seen the traffic back and forth when I like turned on push notifications on my OS X server at home, and it looks a lot like that.
Huh. Wow. Anyway, in the next build of the beta, it's going to support push notifications. So you'll be able to send a message to someone, get out of the app, and then get a push notification if that person responds to your message, which will make this so much more usable. So
yeah, I don't know why you'd do with it now. I'm also not sure like why they need an app for this. Like,
Yeah, I mean, you can go to steampowered.com on your cell phone.
Well, I guess, you know, this way they can kind of control the brand a little bit. And I mean, there are some features that you can do inside of an application that you couldn't really do with a web page. But I think like the chat thing is kind of a bad. I don't know.
Yeah, I think. Some other uses that
I'm
I
all
can
about
envision.
Jabbers.
I mean, it seems to be good about like you can check. Groups, group notifications, group messages, upcoming events, that sort of stuff. And as I said, like checking sales. That sales are a huge part of Steam, so being able to check those sort of on your commute or whatever seems like that's a win on both sides, basically. So I think that's a big use case.
Do they not like just send you an email when they have a sale?
Not really. I mean, because they have sales every day and every weekend and every midweek.
I get an email every morning from Newegg. I get an email every morning from Banana Republic. I get an email every day.
I guess, yeah. Anyway, it's very slick. It's cool. I mean, you know, maybe this is leading into Steam having like an app marketplace for mobile games. But that would be the end of the world. So,
yeah.
Which we're in the right year for that. But I hope not. So.
Did Amazon change their webpage?
You mean Amazon.com?
Yeah, like, yeah. Is that, it really now webpage? Amazon.com? And why is everything in Chinese? No. Is there like, when you go to the website, does it look different to you? So, like a couple days ago, I thought it looked really cool.
You're probably in their, their A/B testing group or something. You got that cookie for a little bit. I've seen that interface. It's super white and super clean.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. I saw it once, and I thought I was hallucinating it because it was late at night.
Yeah. Like, why does this look cool? Yeah,
I woke up the next day and I'm like, did that really happen? And then I visit Amazon and it's the normal standard Amazon interface. I'm like, nah, that was. But then I googled it and it's like, yeah, a few people here and there are getting this new Amazon interface. Huh. So
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed really good. I wonder, the current interface is not good. I mean, there's a lot of things that are wrong with the current interface, but it apparently works quite well, and a lot of people have gotten very used to it. So I think as radical a redesign as that looked from the few moments I saw it, I think that would freak a lot of people out. But maybe, with good results in the long term.
I mean, seriously, like when I go to Amazon, like I don't look at the page. I just put in what I'm searching for and buy it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I mean. Like you that's because you know where everything is, right?
Like, no, I don't know where anything is. I just go to the search and I type in what I want.
Right, those actions, finding the search bar, then once you're on the item page, making sure it's the item that you want, and then going through the purchasing process. Like, all of those tasks are things you know how to do really well in the current interface.
I guess. Sure.
So if things, like, radically shook up...
You might be giving me a lot of credit. Like, I'm not a sophisticated user. Anyway. I think it's really cool. It's actually kind of funny because it's when I log into my wife's account, because she gets her account's the account that has Prime.
Oh yeah,
and because she's a student and, like, you know, is free. Right. And then the my account, if I log into mine, I get the old interface. So I could do like a side by side comparison, but I don't know. I really like it. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't like imagining this.
I thought I was hallucinating too the one time that I saw it. So yep. Anyway. All right. I was going to transition into this from crappy mobile games, but alas, we went in a different direction. But there's a Facebook IPO that's coming up.
Okay.
Yeah, they just filed for it. They are raising $5 billion of cash monies.
Okay.
Okay. Zuckerberg is maintaining a controlling stake in the company.
And do you know what that percentage is?
Huge. So there's two classes.
No, how big is it?
It's huge. I mean, it's massive. So there's two classes of stock, right? There's the Class A stock, which is what people get to buy, which is, you know, this $5 billion. And the Class A stock gets one vote apiece. And then there's Class B stock, which is the sort of in-the-know stock, which is worth 10 votes apiece. And the people who hold the Class B stock, the largest shareholders, are Zuckerberg, Sean Parker, and Dustin Moskovitz. And the three of those people have signed a voting agreement such that basically all of their votes count for Zuckerberg's votes. So basically, even if Zuckerberg were to sell off like half of his shares, half of his stake, or more, actually. And I believe it's if you sell some ridiculous percentage. Like, if he were to reduce his stake in the company to, like, 9%, he would still control it completely.
That's the case for a lot of companies.
I mean, this, from what I read, this is a, for a company this big, for a company valued at $100 billion, this is unusual. And especially something this high profile. I mean, when Google had their IPO, I believe the co-founders had a 49% stake, and it was between the two of them. I'm not sure about that. And I think Bill Gates had a 49% stake in Microsoft. Zuckerberg has effectively like a 70 or 80% stake. Yeah, it's insane.
But then you've had companies like Oracle where, you know, Ellison controlled it with like, you know, 9%.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, there's a very, it doesn't really, it's irrelevant.
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, it's like,
first of all, if you know anything about Mark Zuckerberg, you could assume that he's not going to do anything that would put him in a situation where he's going to lose control over Facebook.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Flat out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have any other expectation. So however they engineer the numbers so that that works out, that's going to be as a foregone conclusion.
Right.
I mean, the it's interesting, though, that they have like this stock cartel with a gentleman's agreement, if you will.
Right.
Did you know that every, I mean, talk about a sausage fest, like that entire like leadership team over there, it's all bros.
No, there's, what's her name?
Yeah, she doesn't count.
She doesn't.
She's not on the executive team. Like, you talk about the VP, his sister or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a vice president. That doesn't count.
Okay, all right.
She's not on the board.
I'm trying to find her name.
Something Zuckerberg.
Sheryl Sandberg. Sandberg. A vice, or what is she? She's Sheryl Sandberg is the current. She's the COO. What are you talking about?
She's not on the board, though. Is she?
She's the COO.
Officer, I don't know. She is on the executive team, so you're right about that. But I'm pretty sure
she's also on the board of the Walt Disney Company. Hey. And Starbucks. Wow. Anyway. So, yeah. But, yeah. So, anyway, Facebook in general, though. I do not like Facebook. I don't have a Facebook account. I would never want to work for Facebook. I don't think Facebook is doing good things. I don't like Facebook.
Well,
thoughts?
There's a lot of things I don't like about Facebook. I'm pretty, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that I like about it, and then there's a lot of things that I hate about it.
As with most things.
Yeah. So, like, the things that I like about it are that it's, like, the only social networking tool that my grandmother knows how to use.
Okay. Yeah.
So, there's people in my family that are not necessarily ever going to do anything like intentionally install a Jabber client or even, like...
Intentionally.
Yeah.
Well, I love the idea of one of your family members accidentally installing a Jabber client.
Gmail.
Oh, Google I see. Thought. Okay. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, not a bad point. At the time, that's... To be quite honest, like, there's a lot of people that I have, like, in my IM roster that, you know, they don't even know what they're doing.
They just log into Gmail and the thing signs in. Yep.
Yeah. They log into Gmail. My name is green and they can talk to me there if they want to. I had, like, years and years ago, I like telling this story. One of my cousins, like, installed AOL Instant Messenger for her and knew my username on that. So added me to the account. And periodically she'd send me these IMs and they would always start out with "Dear Emery," and then a comma and then like a long delay and then a paragraph and then another paragraph and then "Love, comma, grandma." Like, it wasn't really
amazing.
Yeah. The instant message concept didn't really translate from email.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Or from traditional letter writing, which is what she was drawing that from originally.
Yeah. I mean, she originally got on the internet to for like genealogy stuff. So,
oh really?
Like,
wow.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Huh. She's a genealogy genius. She's a geniusologist.
Genius.
Yes. But she's a I mean, it took a long time for her to get like a proper computer though. She held out for a long time. She had like a one of those electronic word processors, like the full-size ones, the monitor and everything.
Uh-huh.
She had one of those for years. And then eventually started getting computers. But she uses Facebook. She can figure that out. Wow. So, that's really one of the only reasons I stick around is because some people in my family. I mean, the downsides of Facebook are that now my family has learned that I'm kind of an asshole and so are my friends and we like to swear a lot I have a hard time, like, you know, keeping my big yap shut in general. And it's even harder on Facebook because I get like, you know, I get all butthurt about something in the news and I like rail on it for a while. So, I mean, there's that. And like, you know, the fact that they like, you know, follow me around and like creep on sites I visit and I don't know, but Google does that too.
Sure.
Everyone does it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it's my outrage threshold peaks and wanes when it comes to Facebook. I think that it's definitely shady.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of things they do that are really dicey. And I also think that like this valuation and like the money that they're making, I'm skeptical, Kat.
Yeah. Well, so the valuation is $100 billion and their profit is like $1 billion, I guess.
I think they're making a lot of money, but I don't know how that's going to last.
Their profit is a couple hundred million. Their revenue is like just over $1 billion.
Yeah,
which is compared to a $100 billion valuation, that's a little iffy.
Well, so it's more than a website for posting your cat photos. Like, there's an awful lot going on with Facebook. There's, I mean, seriously, they have
it's a platform. A huge,
Yeah, it is a platform. It is infrastructure.
I mean,
there is
a company that went public last year, Zynga, that is more or less built on top of Facebook. And that company had an absurd valuation. So,
yeah, but aren't they like...
Oh, I mean, I think their stock is actually up now because of the Facebook IPO news. But, I mean, they're terrible and they're not going anywhere.
Then you got like, you know, the Groupon and you got like...
Yeah, yeah.
There's all kinds of like just... BS companies that are eating it out there.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good, right? I mean, because like last time this happened, the BS companies did really well in the stock. You know, those were the hot stocks. So,
well, here's the thing that I'm skeptical about though with Facebook is that some of the initial investment So, I mean, like some of the banks and some of the people that like bankrolled the initial launch, you know, for them to get their money out, it has to have a very big splash so they can get their, you know, their stake covered.
Yeah.
And so, you know, hopping out there with a, you know, I don't know what I don't trust them anymore. Like, yeah, you know, the last 10 years have taught me to be a little skeptical when someone from Morgan Stanley is like, oh, everything's fine, this is going to be great, you know. Or like any of the other like investment, like I'm a little, I don't know, it's a little scary. Yeah, but we'll see what happens, I guess, right?
So yeah, so another part of this is kind of along those lines a bit. I mean, there's this skeptics article in the Wall Street Journal that sort of talks about partly that, partly like, you know, is this really as big of a deal as everybody wants it to be, you know? But then the other half of this is that sort of this is the biggest, the biggest IPO in a while, the biggest IPO this year as far as hype goes, as far as the one that's going to make all the headlines, the one that ostensibly is the representation of what America is bringing to the world in terms of capitalism. And it's like basically largely a diversion. Like it's a tool for, you know, I don't want to say wasting time, but the article says wasting time, right?
Like, yeah.
And so, you know, the quote is, but Facebook represents a disturbing trend in U.S. capitalism, genuflection to the diversion industry. Apple Inc. is guilty. Google is guilty. Media companies are guilty, too. And it's sort of like, I remember
that's very big of him to admit that, like, the entire entertainment industry, whose sole purpose is to divert people, is right. is part of this also as right. an afterthought. Like, they completely drive it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a Tony Blair quote when he was Prime Minister of the UK.
What did I say?
Where
that one? He said that a lot, right?
Where he said basically that you know, we, and I'm paraphrasing, but that we really need to focus on our country's strengths, on the entertainment industry and the, you know, the art industries, and you know, which is it's like, all right, you know, but what about the manufacturing, and what about the actually, you know, like,
yeah,
the productivity sectors. So yeah, so the idea behind this article is basically that Facebook is a harbinger of you know, an American shift in focus to trifles, you know, it, as far as like our capital you know, capitalistic goals.
That ship sailed. That ship sailed, though.
Yeah.
And but one of the reasons that Facebook is so sticky is because the Facebook identity means something. So like your Facebook account credentials can unlock an awful lot of stuff for you. And there's a lot of things like, you know, Microsoft Passport.
Yeah.
There's, you know, like no one's ever really done that well.
Yeah.
They've never had like, you know, I mean, there's, I guess, you know, in higher education, you have Shibboleth, which is designed to be like a portable identity that you can use to use services on the web with one set of credentials. Then there's the OpenID stuff. And then you've got things like your Google account and your Facebook account and OAuth. And there's all these like identity tools that are out there. But the Facebook one seems to be one of the strongest. And it came kind of out of nowhere compared to people who've been working on identity for a long time.
Yeah.
So like I don't know. Like it's going to be hard for people to get out. I mean, it's just like with Google accounts. Like if you want to ditch Google, it's very hard, difficult to do because your Google account can do a lot more than just log into Gmail.
Yeah. Well, I guess I kind of draw a distinction. I actually like Facebook as a platform. I do not like Facebook as a service.
Yeah.
Like I do not enjoy the idea of using Facebook, but the idea of having a Facebook account that can enable all of these other things is actually kind of cool.
Did you manage to go through your undergrad career without ever having a Facebook account?
No, I had a Facebook account, you know, first couple of years, first year and a half maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. 'Cause that's the other thing too, is like when there's I mean, I work in a student population. So there's, you know, incoming students who are all of a sudden, like, kind of at sea, right? And, like, mm-hmm. being able to very quickly network and get involved, or at least, you know, keep your fingers on, for a lot of people, what is a brand new community. I mean, that's where Facebook gets you.
I guess. I never found it all that useful in that respect.
You're a little more savvy, though. See, that's the other thing, too, is, like, you have a skill set that I guess your student community where you're at would probably be similar to you in that way. So, I mean, maybe there's a lower occurrence of it there. But I think people who don't have, like, that same technical expertise or even interest, I don't know that they would feel the same way. I think one of the reasons that they like Facebook is that Facebook can put things front and center for them.
Right.
In a way that, whereas, you know, you or I would be just as comfortable, you know, squirreling a search engine or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. And as I said, Facebook as, Facebook as an enabler of other activities, I kind of like the idea of. Facebook as an activity in and of itself, I just really dislike.
So. You should click dislike.
That's
a huge negative on Facebook. Not just that, but they've contributed to how headlines and news stories are written, so that people want to share a story, but they don't want to click like on something that's, you know what I mean? Like, the way that they kind of like funnel news to people is it puts you in a situation where people have to write a headline that's better than the actual story.
Yeah.
Because they,
and you're not going to click like on, like, you know, 50 protesters die in such and such. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's had a very negative impact and from my perspective in terms of how the news is done. And, like, it's bad enough that we have this 24-hour nonstop news cycle, but now, you know, the headlines and the stories all have to be, you know, like Fox and Friends.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, Facebook IPO will be a very big deal, for better or for worse.
That place is going to suck in like 3 years. I worked at AOL after all of the IPO millionaires were getting really bored.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was hell on earth.
Yep.
there was a lot of people that did not give a rip about anything.
Right.
And it became very difficult to get anything done.
There was a news article today that they had a photographer set up outside the Facebook campus parking lot, and they got like several photos of new Porsches like rolling out of the parking lot.
We had a guy that he rode to work on a motorcycle every day. He had a Ducati, and he had something wrong with it. He had to drop it off at the shop, and instead of, like, you know, getting a ride, he bought another Ducati and rode that in. And there was a guy that had, like, you know, the two Audi S4s in his garage, one with snow tires and one without.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Then,
Anyway, I totally agree with that. I'm looking forward to seeing how this all progresses over the next, over the few months following the IPO, and then over the next few years, definitely.
Well, what's going to happen with, like, I mean, along those lines too, there's big things going on at PlayStation, right?
Yeah. So we've got some decent news, actually, out of your favorite company in the world, I know.
Hate those guys.
Sony. So basically, Sony is in this kind of rut, and you wouldn't really expect it.
I wonder why they treat their customers like criminals and idiots.
But it's like, you know, you just think of Sony as like, oh, they're so big that they're in so many businesses. Like, how could they possibly be, you know, losing money? You know, because it's just like you take it for granted. Like, Sony is Sony. Yeah, they're, you know, they're out there making money.
When have they ever made a mobile phone that didn't suck?
Yeah.
So they're bad at some things.
So it turns out Sony's actually not making money. The only division of Sony that has been consistently making money recently has been the PlayStation division.
Ugh. And they're the worst.
Yeah. So as a result of that, they've appointed a new president, Kaz Hirai. who is replacing the outgoing Howard Stringer.
Well, hold on. Okay. So why is he outgoing? Okay, so Kaz was the head of PlayStation, and now he's going to be the head of Sony proper.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And I should say CEO, not president. New CEO. So Kaz Hirai was the head of the PlayStation division, the only consistently profitable division. And it's not like it, you know, you'd expect, because Sony's in this rut, what you'd expect is, well, they're replacing the current CEO with someone who is, you know, going to bring in some fresh ideas, is going to be different, is going to, you know, set things back on track. But also,
is this like actual like Sony Japan or Sony America? There's like a dozen Sonys.
No, I mean, this is the you know, top tier of Sony.
There was a dude named Howard that's responsible for all Sony.
Yeah, he originally worked for Sony America, and he moved up the ranks, and dude named Howard Stringer was running Sony. Yes.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I have no reason to believe you're lying.
Yeah. No. He was, I believe, born in America. You know, there was a guy who ran Olympus for another Japanese company for several years who was an American. So it happens.
Huh.
Anyway, but Kaz Hirai is not American. Although he does speak very fluent English, he's also kind of.
You're not gonna say something racist, are you?
He's not reserved, right? So like there are stories of him being at PlayStation E3 parties and like getting up on stage and drunkenly wandering around and and dancing with people and
so he's like our friend Joy.
Yeah. but like he's, you know, so he it's an interesting choice to groom him to be the new CEO. But hey, he ran the only successful division, and really, I mean, he made PlayStation into the success story that it is as far as Sony is concerned.
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't throw him a parade just yet. Because here's the thing about the PlayStation division.
Yes.
They've only got two products. They've only got two products, and they both play games.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, everywhere else in Sony, they have... I mean, and maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is that they haven't...
They need to be more focused.
They haven't appled.
Yeah.
Like, when Scully was at Apple, and that's when, like, all this fragmentation happened, and there are all these, like, different... Yeah. So, like, the first thing that Steve does when he's coming back is start to streamline and say... You know, maybe we don't need to have 8 different Performa models. Maybe we just need none and like one computer called an iMac and one call. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That was a huge thing. And like, you know, well, some people aren't going to like your products. Well, they weren't going to like them anyways. And it's costing you too much money to make them.
It's amazing how few tech companies have learned from that example.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at HP, you look at like Dell, you look at all the Android phones out there. You know, you look at Sony, you look at Samsung, you look at any other tech company. I mean, I'm sure there's a few out there, but you look at most tech companies, and they're still naming their devices like the LG S1001 PWC or whatever. You know,
if you go try to buy like an AV receiver, a few months ago when I bought the new Pioneer,
yeah,
like If you wanted to buy something from Pioneer or Sony, like they have 6 completely identical looking boxes with 6 very different sets of capabilities and 6 very different prices.
Yeah,
but
and very similar model names, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah. Like, you know, the differentiation will be one or two characters that's different. So, but you know, like they really probably only need 2.
Yeah.
Because like in the case of Sony, they've always had like their regular consumer line, and then they have the ES line, the elevated standard line.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like Sony and Sony ES, just like Pioneer has Pioneer Elite, and Magnavox has or Philips has Marantz. Like the Marantz line is like the primo,
right? Yeah, line. Which is okay. So, I mean, something like that is all right, but
yeah. And that's fine because that's where you can do like your differentiation and your specialization. Like I think having like a premium line like that, that's the ideal place to do it. On the consumer end, it is ridiculous to have. First of all, you're asking retailers to carry 5 different versions of the same thing. Now you're also like the only real difference in them is like, you know, $30 in price. So what are you really giving people. Right. I don't know. Yeah. Like their entire that their product lines are got to be a mess. But like, I mean, Sony also does like a million other things too. Like they have, I mean, it's not just like home entertainment. They also have like, you know, their televisions. They've got their AV stuff. They've got computers. Mm-hmm. They sell like the Vio line, which is
terrible.
A good idea in theory. They have cameras. They have
they are a music label.
Yes, they how did I forget that?
I know.
They also make the industry's best root kits.
Yeah.
Like nobody
the
puts
finest the top grade root kits. Yeah.
Nobody installs malware like that.
Yeah. But yeah, so this whole
Blu-ray,
transition though.
Blu-ray, the whole Blu-ray thing is entirely Sony.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're and that's why I was saying at the beginning of the segment, I'm like, well, it's so weird to think that this company that is everywhere, so omnipresent, is not doing well, you know?
Which do you think that are we talking like how long do you think they have before it goes under?
Oh, I think they're still in okay shape. I just, you know, they're not seeing the kind of they're not seeing the kind of profits and growth that they would like to be seeing. I think they are losing some money. I don't think they're in dire straits, but yeah. I mean, it, you know, this whole transition though is the word coming out of Sony regarding this transition is basically Howard Stringer was awesome. We're replacing him with his heir. Like all the Sony stuff is, you know, Kaz Arai saying, "Yeah, Howard Stringer, I'm happy. I can't wait to carry on his legacy, and you know all this stuff."
So. Oh, that's like when the dude from HP screwed up, and everyone was like, "Oh yeah," they tried to like play it off, like that was dumb. And then that's a hard thing to pull off because I mean, even with any company that has like an executive change like that, that's always rocky, and they always blow smoke up your butt about the entire thing. Yep. It's like. One of the great things though with like publicly traded companies is that some of the regulations now require them to disclose things like the Sony breach, you know, that we had. And there was like a story today that you were talking about earlier with the VeriSign. Mm-hmm. Like they had to release in their 10Q when they filed last quarter. They were like, well, they had to disclose that there was a compromise somewhere at VeriSign. Now, interestingly enough, the bulk of like what VeriSign does is no longer actually VeriSign. So the managed security services thing, that's all out. The certificate business was all sold to Symantec. The few things that VeriSign actually still does today are naming and like VoIP stuff. Okay. So like this, some of like the telecom stuff they still do, and some of the DNS stuff they do.
Well, and so take us through this. So what I mean, the story came up. I noted it, but I really, I don't have that good of an understanding of it.
So. Well, the articles that I was reading earlier today, and here's what's funny because they tried to like get in touch with people that still work at VeriSign, and they had a hard time because there's not really a lot of people going on over there right now. But they got a hold of Ken Silva. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Ken Silva and Bruce Ong were some of the original VeriSign employees. Like, we talked early era. Now, here's a interesting bit of trivia. Ken Silva, if I'm not mistaken, let me double check this before I say it. But they wound up having like they talked to him and they're like, you know, what do you know about this? And he's like, I don't know. Like, no one knew anything about it because there was this whole thing like where. I mean, nobody really knew anything. Like the disclosure is that they had a compromise of some sort, but I mean, if it's in the facilities that they talk about in the article that I was reading, not a whole lot really critical goes on there. I mean, like the way that VeriSign has such a distributed network, like there's no reason to believe that, like, you know, the DNS system or the certificate system is in any way in jeopardy. Like,
well, we've talked about it several times on this show. We've talked about certificate authorities being compromised and how that's often a really big deal. I mean, DigiNotar went under because they were compromised. Their certificate system was compromised.
But, you know, VeriSign sold all that business to Symantec.
Right.
So it's one more thing for Symantec to suck at. But there's also, like, the whole concept of, like, I don't know, like, you know, seriously, like, at this point, it's pretty much all infrastructure stuff. So, you know, machine getting compromised there, it may have been, you know, like someone's workstation in HR for all I know. Like, I haven't seen any reason to think I don't know. Like, where else could I? I mean, I don't know.
Huh. Well, it's. We've talked about this in the past, but like it seems like recently there's this trend of stories like this getting more press and being people being more aware of this, seeing more reporting on this. Started with the Sony thing, I think, with the Sony compromise, and since then, I talked about DigiNotar. We've seen a bunch of other sort of both account compromises and certificate authority compromises and other things. Where it seems like they're getting a lot of press. And this one, there's a story on MSNBC about it. You know, it made the rounds earlier. But that might be just a factor of this sort of story being more of a big deal in the eyes of the press than it would have been, say, last year.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see, though, that like requirements like this are good because in some cases, companies go out of their way to conceal and hide this, and I think it'll be good in that it'll have some increased pressure of accountability. So I'm happy about that. I don't know. I mean, this story though, I could not see anything in it that led me to believe that there was like, some huge cause for alarm. You know,
yeah.
It's from what I can tell, I'm trying to figure out. Oh man, I want to see if. I've got great trivia. If I can.
Okay. Frantically Google over there. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm trying to get confirmation on this. Let's see.
we could bring it to people next show if it's if it is something you don't think you'll be able to find. But
anyway. I don't.
Any luck?
Well, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I don't want to say it now.
All right. Well, we'll put it in your stuff next show if you do end up uncovering some good bit of trivia. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, with that, I think that'll do it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. You can contact us at show@hellyeah.com. You can visit us online at show.hellyeah.com and
on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send us a tweet @hellyeahshow.
All right. And with that, we will see you next week.